Welcome to the Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise podcast, where you will get to listen in on the thought-provoking conversations with countercultural business, financial, and money thought leaders, sharing their wisdom and insights with your host, Christina Wise. Christina Wise is a highly successful serial entrepreneur, real estate investor, best-selling author, millionaire business and money coach, and the founder of the Wealthy, Wealthy brand. Christina has mastered the money game, and now her mission is to help everyone willing to do the work win the money game too. If you are looking to upgrade your financial life, stop worrying about money, and start living the fulfilling life you deserve, strap in, take a deep breath, and get ready to learn. This podcast will change the way you think about business, money, and wealth. Let's get into it.
Welcome back. This is Christina Wise, your host. In this episode, I interview my good friend, Eric Qualman, also known as Equal Man. Eric is extraordinary. He is one of the leading motivational speakers in the world, selling out huge auditoriums of thousands of people at a time. He's the best-selling author, the number one best-selling author of over five books. So if you want to be motivated, then you'll want to listen in. He talks about how to stay balanced and centered, how to live a big life, how to reach a place of joy and happiness with complete fulfillment while doing your life's work and not getting burned out. He talks about his definition of wealth and that we really need to redefine this word called wealth, which really had my ears perked up, as you can imagine. So we talk about business innovation. We talk about digital landscape and social media, and he gives advice on the number one best social media tool to use today. So I'll let you listen in to figure out what that is. So again, be motivated and enjoy my conversation with Eric Qualman. Eric, wow, it's so much fun to be here with you. It's been a while since we've seen each other. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you. So great to see you. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So what's up with the green glasses?
I'll give you the short accelerated version. So my name's Eric Qualman. If you get an email address, historically it's your first initial last name. So for my entire career, I've been Equal Man. And I've been in the digital space for 27 years, and I hated it the first 10 years. You walk into a meeting, you're an intern or a junior account executive. Hey, Equal Man can handle it. He can do it. And then about 11 years ago, I wrote a book called Socialnomics, which was fortunate to do well. And I sat down with a magazine. They're interviewing me. And they said, hey, we want to take some photos. And I go, great. And they go, well, since your name's kind of Equal Man, like a superhero, do you mind wearing some Clark Kent-like glasses? And I go, no, that sounds like a fun idea. And they go, well, our issue's coming out March, St. Patrick's Day. Do you mind if they're green? I go, no, let's do it. And so we do that. I didn't think anything of it. And then a couple weeks later, I flew to Kenya to give a speech. And the night before, I went to a rescue shelter. And at their rescue shelter, I was adopting a baby cheetah. Not to take home. My wife would kill me. But just adopting a baby cheetah to support the local community. And on the drive over to the shelter, the nice lady that was with me said, hey, we had Usain Bolt, the Olympian sprinter, here yesterday, and he adopted from the same litter that you're going to adopt from. And we filmed yesterday. We have the camera crew here as well today. Do you mind if we film? I said, no, whatever we can do to support the shelter, I'm all in. And she looked at me and goes, but when we're filming, we'd really like you to wear your green glasses. And I kind of looked at her and I go, oh, I don't wear those green glasses around all the time. I look like an idiot. That was just for that photo shoot. And she looked at me. I could tell she was so disappointed. And she said, no, everyone in Kenya, that's what they think you look like. So long story longer is I've been stuck wearing the green glasses. But for all you small businesses out there, it's really about I've learned to walk in that discomfort. So I've lost some business because of it. Because they're like, you're not serious enough for a Fortune 500 event. Where I've gained much more business because of it. And we don't have time to go into all the stories, but I've gotten business because people just recognize the green glasses. And it's really a long story to say that my cheetah is much faster than Usain Bolt's cheetah. But no, in all seriousness, for all the businesses out there, you don't want to be in the middle. You have to kind of walk in that discomfort on a lot of different fronts.
Yeah, that is. That's a great lesson. So let's jump back in time a little bit when your first book and the video came out that went totally viral. And I'm not even sure if you and I, as long as we've known each other, we've had this conversation. But what was behind your first Socialnomics book, the video that went viral? What was the beginning of all that? And first of all, how long ago was that? What year was that? And then, yeah, how did that start?
So I started writing the book in 2008, and at that time, MySpace was bigger than Facebook. And the reason I started writing the book, and someone told me this, that's a well-known author, that said there's two reasons to write a book. Either A, you want to change yourself, or B, you want to change the world. And he said sometimes it's both. And the main impetus behind the book was I had no visions of writing a business book at any point in my career. But I was talking to people about social media being this next big thing, and people just weren't getting it. And I started to realize, wait, I was frustrated, but then I go, wait, am I the only one that's seeing this right now? And there's other people, contemporaries that I talked to that were. But then my buddy said, hey, go talk to my publisher. I think you should write a book about this. And so that's what started the book. And it was the right place, right time, because at the time, everyone thought social media is just for teenagers. They didn't understand that MySpace was going to overtake Facebook was going to overtake MySpace. So it was the right place, right time. And then the video came about because I was talking to small businesses as well as Fortune 500 companies, and they nod and agree that social media might be a thing. But then we'd leave the meeting and they wouldn't do anything. So there's no action. And at the time, I was the head of marketing at Travelzoo. So I was just interested in the topic. That's when I go, I need a video just to nail it over the head, to show them statistically through a story why they have to take action. So instead of speaking for an hour with them one-on-one, I go, let me just get this video. So I did the video, and then it went massively viral because there's other people like me that were wrestling with the same issue. And so they started using the video in all the meetings that they had. So it was great. It was fun. It was a wild ride, but that's where it all started.
And what happened from there? So this video went viral, and I remember the video long before you and I had met and known each other, and I used it in a presentation because back in the day, I was really known as a leader and disruptor and in real estate and real estate technology. So I was trying to make the same point as you were, not as, you know, I didn't know it would become, you had foresight with this. I was just knowing that something was changing, that there were these new tools and we in real estate need to get on board, and my industry was so antiquated. So I used your video to, you know, it was so exceptional to make a point of, guys, we've got to pay attention. The world is changing. We're radically and quickly moving into a whole new future. So, I mean, the video was extraordinary, and I used it to change or try to bring new awareness to hundreds, if not thousands of people. So what happened then after that video went viral?
And first of all, thank you for that's somewhat how we got connected, but also too, you're probably more of a visionary because it's harder when you're in a space that thinks it's not possible in their space. And so I'm talking over here that you're in a space where they're going, well, that's good for Nike, but that's not good for us in real estate. That's nothing to do with us. So kudos to you for being a pioneer, because I always say that pioneers get pushback. And all your listeners are probably pioneers. So understand that pushback is super frustrating in the moment. But guess what? It's actually a signal you're pioneering. When you're not getting that pushback is when you got to be worried that, whoops, either A, I have the wrong business model, or B, I'm about to get disrupted. And so my story from that video is there's a lot of bad information out there, I think, for entrepreneurs because it sells. So there's a lot of people, talking heads, experts in the space, and part of it's because they have to be hot takes because that's what sells. But their hot take is any entrepreneur would never work for a big company. Any entrepreneur would burn the boats. Any entrepreneur just has to go all in. Well, I'm going to give you a story of my journey that is not that. And I think it's similar to a lot of people's journey that's out there listening. It's the same as Warby Parker. The people that started Warby Parker, which is the online eyeglass manufacturer, there were students out of Wharton School of Business, and they had a tough time getting money because they go, well, we're not going all in on this. We think it's a good idea, but we've got good jobs coming out of school, and we're going to do this as a side hustle. And so some people didn't invest because they weren't all in. And my story is more similar to that. So I write the book, the video goes viral. I'm the head of marketing at Travelzoo. I was already speaking on search, because search was hot, and we spent about $25 million in paid search, which doesn't seem big today, but it was one of the biggest buyers back then. And so at these search conferences, I started talking on social, which the crowd started to dwindle. They're like, why is he talking about this teenage stuff? But then it finally kind of, like a lot of your listeners out there, you got to stick with your conviction. And so I stuck with it, powered through, and then the book did well, and the publisher had me speak. Now, I have a tendency to mumble in interpersonal communication even to this day. And so I always took Toastmasters, and I was head of marketing at Travelzoo. The founder's German, so he doesn't speak English very well, so I had to speak to Wall Street and the press. So baptism by fire, but it prepared me for the moment when the publisher asked me to speak at a conference. I spoke, and this agent goes, "I don't know what you're doing, but you should do that for a living. You should go out and just motivate people and talk about your books on stage." So it wasn't that I all of a sudden go, "All right, let's drop everything," because we had our first child on the way. And just a real quick aside, I don't have time to go into all the details, but it was one of those moments too that I was involved. If you remember Bernie Madoff, there were smaller versions of Bernie Madoff. And most of my friends happened to be from graduate school, CFOs of big and also small companies. And so they're investing in this good investment. I invested in it. And like a lot of people made the mistake of over-investing in that. It turned out to be a scam. The guy spent jail time. But these are, my friends are really good at that stuff. I'm not. But I was at a moment in time, I said, "Wait, it's too good to be true. Let's pull it out." But the time I wanted to pull out my money, it was too late to get it back. So it was a terrible time to become an entrepreneur. But I tell that for the listeners because there's no perfect time. It's just like a tree. The best time to plant it's yesterday. The second best time's today. And so what I did, I was a fortunate. I was working then at the time. So I was head of marketing at Travelzoo. Then I was the global director of all things digital at a company called EF Education. And they're in 50 countries. They're huge. They have 30,000 employees, but privately held. And I reported into the family that owns the company. And fortunately, my direct boss is amazing. And so I went to him and said, "Look, I'm taking vacation days to speak about my book. One, is that okay? But two, with my team, I can't really handle my team. It's not really fair to the company. It's not fair to me also because I'm trying to do this new thing. I'd love to figure out a win-win." And so what they did was they said, "All right, we'll get rid of your team. We'll cut your salary in half, but you're happy you can keep your health benefits and just sit with us and you can help with some advisory capabilities when we need it." So I tell that story because a lot of times entrepreneurs, it's somewhat of a side hustle at the beginning, or you don't have to go all in. For some of you out there, you have to do that. It's just in your DNA. You can't do a couple things. And most of the time, over time, you want to focus. But in the short term, depending on what's up with your family, we were having a kid coming, a baby, my first daughter coming to the world. We lost all that money, so didn't have that nest egg that was there for that specifically. So again, a very long story, but just hopefully for all the listeners out there, there's no recipe for this is how you do entrepreneurship. Some of you, it definitely makes sense, just go all in. For others, it might be more of a soft shoe approach like Warby Parker. And then once you know it's time, then you go all in.
You know, there's such a big lesson in that. And it's so true too, that it's the hustle, the hustle, the hustle, the all in, sacrifice everything. And if you're not, it's almost that you're not as serious or something's wrong with you. That really is the message. And there's so many ways and I teach and speak on money, as you know, and people really get stuck in this money trap, in the earning money trap that I call it, that they think that there's just one way to make money, all in, like you said, at their job or all in with the business, and that there really aren't new ways to make money. And we're in an age, and I think so, but from your experience, where there's so many different gigs. We're in this gig economy, in other words, where we can have more than one gig at a time. That might even make life a little bit more exciting versus more stressful by being able to have a couple different things that we're focused on and can go in and out, not to just get too bored or too stressed or too overwhelmed in just one thing. So do you see a lot of that out there as far as like what I call this gig economy, that to get out of the money trap of there's different ways to make money with these side hustles, the way you call them, and it may take off, it may not. Just having a side hustle might be just a little bit of extra revenue every month or income each month that makes a difference.
I think there's a good line from The Happiness Project by Gretchen Rubin. I believe that's who wrote that. But The Happiness Project, where she says the exact opposite of a known truth is probably also true. So while all of us should be hyper-focused, don't multitask, you know, you one thing at a time in terms of your hours, But the exact opposite of that is also true. If you think about Google, 20% of the time they allow for their employees is for think time. So it might never make money for the company, but it's just like 20% of your time should be spent on new things. And I think as individuals and as entrepreneurs and small businesses, I think it's important for all of us to spend 80% of our time on our main thing, but then you've got that 20% carved out because you don't know what's going to change. But then you're prepared if something goes in the economy or all of a sudden this part of the business kind of twilights down, is that you're not in a tough spot. So again, it's kind of both. When you think about it, is you got to be super focused on the main core and always, and Jay Papasan, who's local to Austin and wrote the book with Gary Keller on the one thing, a great question is always, what's the one thing if I do it well, it makes everything else easier or unnecessary? So definitely focus on that one thing, but also know that one thing helps this other piece, that 20% over there as well. So it's not doing everything. It's just making sure all your eggs aren't in the same basket as well.
Yeah, that's well said. That's a good financial piece of advice as well. So let's shift gears a little bit. And what are you doing now? That's where you started. And how has it transformed to where you are now, what you're doing now? And how different is it from those beginning days to where we are today in this digital landscape?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. So obviously I came 26 years in the digital landscape, but when I speak on stage, so primarily what I do now is I give motivational talks around the world. And so it's for small business, to big organizations, could be government, like I was just with the FBI. But it's really about understanding that combination, it's digital leadership. So understanding the combination between the offline and the online. And I'm actually, even though my background's in digital, I'm a more offline person. So we live in a Jetsons era, but it's those that act like the Flintstones in the Jetsons that are winning today and will win in the digital decades ahead. And so whether I'm speaking to a group of middle school students or a board of a huge chocolate company, it's really down to the core product is when you think about it, you can't replace face-to-face. These tools are there when time and distance are an issue. So it's really more or less about technology and more about anthropology, which I'm sure a lot of your successful listeners have already figured that out, is that don't get overwhelmed by the technology. And also understand that you don't have to be, you want to be a year ahead of your competition. That's it. And make sure you're not a year ahead of your market. So when you're given that great story about in real estate, you're pushing it, is it was the right time for you to push it. You weren't a year ahead of real estate. It might have been 2 years behind the entertainment business in terms of social, but it was the right time for that real estate market. You weren't ahead of your customer. And so that's mainly what I do. I'm really blessed. I write books, I speak around the world, and then I also own an animation studio. So that's kind of that 20% that I'm talking about. But it works closely with what I do because we're edutainers. And so if I go and speak at a Disney, then all of a sudden we also might do an animation piece for their Disney parks. So it's still in alignment with everything that we're trying to do, which is entertain, educate, and empower people to their best life. And so our laughable goal, and all of you out there should have a laughable goal, meaning you say it, and most people laugh, but the people that aren't laughing are the ones that are going to support you, is that our laughable goal is really to empower 7 billion people in the next decade.
I love that. And so when you use the word empower, what do you mean by that? So if you're going to empower 7 billion, what does that look like? I mean, what is it? Yeah. Like how is that transferred?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. It depends on the individual, obviously, but we always like to entertain, educate, and empower. So we believe that in order to educate someone, you need to entertain them. And so that's why we say we're edutainers. So we want to entertain first. Once it's exciting and interesting for that person, then you can educate them. And with that education comes empowerment. And so it might look to be that there's an executive of a small business, or it's a small business owner, and they've got too many balls that they're juggling. And we sit down with her and go, look, this is how you can kind of mitigate that. This is how you kind of work with that. So you can just get the most important stuff done first rather than the immediate. And then all of a sudden that allows her to lead her best life. At the far extreme, so we wrote a book called What Happens in Vegas Stays on YouTube. It has used a ton in colleges and universities and also middle schools. So that book's all about how to produce your best digital reputation and then protect it. So it's what happens in Vegas stays on YouTube. So many students were using it and administrators that they actually reached out to us and said, hey, can you make one that's specific with only student examples and also includes sexual harassment and cyberbullying? And so the reason I tell you that, that's what's happened on campus stays on YouTube. So it's just student specific. So with that empowerment, that might save someone's life because we get a lot of emails and that's at the far extreme, but it helps save someone from committing suicide at that delicate age because of what's being posted socially. But again, that's at the far extreme. But we always like to say that if it's a 50-year-old small business owner and they're not leading their best life in terms of they're not getting fulfillment, then they're slowly dying. And so that's how we look at empowerment, is just to make sure that you're leading your best life in terms of you're getting joy and fulfillment, not every second and not every day, but just over the long term that you're able to derive that.
So that's great. And is that what you're teaching on stage? Is like, so what is the motivational speech on stage? Because clearly your expertise is digital and it's this digital landscape, the digital footprint, being aware of the footprint we leave behind. So that's been a big part of your message for a long time, as well as technology and disruption and where things are going in this social media and social digital world we live in. So I'm trying to bridge the gap between those two, because that's the way I know you. Now, is the message of how to use these things to live a more joyful, fulfilled life? Or again, what's the motivational talk? What's the message?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, is that when we're talking about digital leadership or transformation, the transformation occurs with the individual first. And what we wanted to do is we wanted to research what are the habits. So whether it's innovation, whether it's transformation, whether it's you're starting your company, it's not a eureka moment. It's a process. And so what we wanted to figure out is what are the habits that digital leaders practice? Because when you think about the business books that most of us use today, they're great. When you think about it, and I've been fortunate to meet most of these authors or their sons, and Stephen Covey wrote Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. That's one of the books. So now it's his son, Stephen Covey Jr. But then there's Jim Collins, Good to Great. And then there's Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point. So amazing books. They're actually amazing people behind stage in the green room. But when you think about it, all those books were written before YouTube existed, before Instagram and Facebook. And so the lens that I was looking at it through was, okay, what's still core? Unfortunately, if you read those books, it's basically 90% still core from a leadership perspective. But what's the digital lens? Now that there's hyperconnectivity, now that we're getting pinged so much more as leaders or as small businesses, you're now wrestling with the way you deal with your family is much different than it was 20 years ago. And your role at that specific in the family is much different than it ever was. And so that's what we wanted to look at, and we came out with basically five habits that most of these digital leaders practice as a process every day. And probably don't have time to go into all of them, so I'll start with the first one. So on stage, I'll talk about, look, it's about simplification. A lot of us think it's about adding stuff. It's not. The hardest thing to do in your success is really going to be derived at what you say no to, and almost everything should be a no. And so I'll ask the audience, hey, all of you out there, how many of you make a to-do list? And then 90% raise their hand. And I've got my hand raised because I make to-do lists. I go, great, you guys are successful. Most people that are successful make to-do lists. And how many of you write them on paper? They all raise their hand. I go, great. And then how many of you check it off or cross it off? And they all raise their hand. And I go, yep, that's because you're getting a dopamine hit. That's why you're doing that. You're getting a dopamine hit when you cross that off. Then I go, how many of you make a not to-do list? And then it's about 4%. So 4% across the country do a not to-do list. But guess what? Digital leaders index super high on making not to-do lists. And so what you want to avoid doing is what I did throughout my career, and still it's an urge for me to do it even today, is you're going to write to-do, 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 to-do. So this to-do list gets super long. That's not a problem in itself. The problem is you're working on item number one, but then your brain's thinking about item 37. And so that everything should default to the not yet list. So we make it a more positive spin that we call them not to-do lists, but we like to call them not yet lists. So almost everything goes over there. And the neuroscience will show that if you do it even the night before, you can do it the morning of, but if you can do it the night before, it allows you to sleep better because now you've put all these items, whether it's a to-do or whether it's a not to-do, they're now on that paper, if you want to use your tablet, whatever, is you've now offset that, it's taken off of your brain and it's put somewhere else. And so that's just a quick example of what we're trying to help people to lead their best life, is their little wins, right? Small steps lead to giant leaps. And so we're just trying to preach, it's a process, and these little things help. And by no means do I do them all well. And so I write the books basically for myself to reference and remind myself, ooh, okay, I got a C minus today. Hopefully tomorrow's more of a B plus or an A minus.
I love that. So what do you see on the horizon? What's coming that those of us that are busy lives and in our businesses and heads down, so we don't, you know, we're not looking up and have the perspective that you have to see maybe what's on the forefront. Do you have any predictions of what's next in this digital world? And not just digital, it's the change of how we are as human beings in this digital world. Like you said, like, how the hell do you navigate being a digital leader and running these businesses and knowing you need a social presence or some public identity while not letting it own you when you get home with your family, or checking your cell phone first thing in the morning when you wake up versus maybe giving your spouse a kiss or something? So, I mean, so many dynamics are changing. So do you see anything in all this? Because it seems like there's shift happening and people are trying to figure it out, and we got really excited about it there for a while, but now it's causing some distraction and causing problems in our life. And you go out to dinner and everybody's on their phones versus having conversation. It just doesn't seem right. And so it's confusing in a way. So do you have anything that you notice that, okay, these things are working themselves out and I predict X?
I mean, one of the reasons among many that I'm excited to be on the show is, one, it's awesome to see you, but also two is that you preach this. And so I think there's going to be a redefinition of wealth. And so what is wealth for each person? It's different. But for most people, and we always ask the question on stage, what's the one word, if someone Googled your name, would you want to show up? What's the one word? And guess what? It's rare we get billionaire, millionaire, which are great things, right? But that's not what they're writing down as their one word. It's inspire, integrity, motivational, kindness, mother, father. So one of the things that I'm really hopeful for, and I've seen firsthand, traveling out of 54 countries, is a redefinition of wealth. And also my hope is that these communication tools have the power, and we haven't seen it yet, to really connect us as a world, to showcase for people that are fortunate to travel. When I travel, the one thing that always looks the same is a children's playground. And everyone that I talk to always wants happiness and health for their family. So the definition of wealth, I think, is going to change. Now, in terms of the technology tools themselves, first, let me caveat this. Obviously, I come from a digital place originally, but also understand that when I think of, say, social media, I think of it as a knife. So on one hand, a knife can be a scalpel and save someone's life. It can cut food to feed someone. But on the other side, it could also take someone's life. So you got to remember, don't demonize the actual tool itself. Some of the management at some of these big companies you can demonize, but it's really just looking at it through a lens of, this stuff's new, we're still wrestling with it. And my hope is that they actually put an age limit on social media, because I think some of these tools, when you look at it, there's people that are quitting, executives that are quitting high positions at a Facebook, at a Google, because they make their money by gamifying these tools. They make their billions of dollars to getting you addicted to these tools. And so they know all the tips and tricks to get you addicted, whether it's a video game, whether it's Facebook, that's how they make their money. And so my hope is that we get an understanding of that. And we're starting to see it. You can see it with your friends out there that are listening, that they don't use Facebook for 2 hours a day anymore. And they understand that it's a balance, that the tool's not bad, it's just how you use it. And also understand where they make their money. So it's designed to have you addicted. So if you have that addiction, you're not alone. Set up those parameters for yourself. And it might be you have to get completely off it for individuals. So individual part on there. Other stuff that has me super excited is that if we can get to mobile voting, that would be huge. Because that's true democracy, where you have 90% of the people voting or get to close to 100%. So mobile voting's coming. It won't happen here in the United States first. That's got me excited. Stuff I'm less excited about that other people are excited about, blockchain. I think people don't really have a firm understanding of that. So The concept and theory is awesome, but execution, we'll see. So I don't know what the time is. It'll happen, but I don't know when the time is for that. So not as bullish on that, not as bullish on virtual reality that's got its time and place. Super bullish on artificial intelligence from a standpoint of that can give us back a lot of time, especially as an entrepreneur. So that if you have your own kind of digital butler or digital assistant, to where however you speak with him or her is, it's just you're walking, you go, hey, can you see if my car is ready at the shop? Or can you, what are the best flights for X, Y, and Z? Can you set up a reservation at this restaurant? And so that has me excited that it'll give you time back to actually live your life. And along with that is when we think about social, that assistant capability, whether it's through a contact lens possibly, to where you don't have to stop with your phone, take a picture of your food, put a filter on it, and send it to Instagram, that the artificial intelligence can record everything and then just take that 30 seconds that matters and automatically send it to the grandparents. So some wild stuff I'm talking about, but it's coming. Self-driving cars coming, not fast enough. That might be where I put a lot of my time in from a volunteer perspective, because that'll just save so many lives, is self-driving cars. So there's a lot out there. Stuff happens a lot slower than we think, because we can see this coming usually for 10, 15 years. The question's not if, it's when. That's why I don't have a giant helicopter behind me. I never make, here's a prediction on this specific company. What I can say is 20 years ago, I go, search is going to be big. But I don't know if Ask Jeeves going to win, Excite, Lycos, Yahoo, or Google's going to win. I just know that search is going to be a massive player. Just like you can tell, artificial intelligence is going to be a massive player, but we can't predict when or who the actual winner is.
Got it. Well, thank you. I love that. And so as we're wrapping up here, I know you've got to go here in a few minutes. What is your definition of wealth?
My definition of wealth is how many people are going to show up at my funeral. Like how many people are going to show up at the funeral? And so it's more about, when you think about it, it's more about your eulogy than your resume. And so that helps with all your decisions out there as a small business, is think 5 years, 10 years. This decision is so stressful for me right now. So you're going through that tough decision. I know your listeners are going through it weekly, and go, what's the right decision 10 years as I look back? Which one's going to matter? And that allows you to focus on what you should be doing as well. Is this, what I'm stressed out about, going to matter? And most of the time, it's probably no. And then occasionally there's a yes. And that also helps point your business in the right direction. And any business that's going to succeed is going to be mission-based. And that mission at the end of it, it's cliche and cheesy, but it literally is, you're putting a smile on someone's face. And so that's also a definition of wealth. How many smiles are you creating? Every business and organization that has success long-term, it's kind of a smile factor when you think about it, because at the end of that, you're producing a smile for someone in some form or fashion. And so that's what it means to be wealthy.
I love that. And then what is any philosophy you have on the financial piece of wealth?
The financial side, obviously, in my mind, we call it at our company water. So I go, look, we want to empower people. We want to empower 7 billion people. But without water, everything dies. And in the world we live in, that water is normally in the form of money. And so we have to produce revenue. Otherwise, we can't empower these people. And so that is a tool. Money is a tool, and it can be used very powerfully, both positive or negatively. And so it's really about understanding that money's a tool and how to use it to the best of your ability.
I love that. All right. One final question that I ask all my guests is to do a little myth busting. From your perspective of the world through those green glasses, what's a myth that you'd like to bust? A belief out there that a lot of people are acting as though it's true and you believe it's categorically false and you want to call it out?
I would call out that, let's see, that's a good question. I think that this is very centric to the United States, so I apologize. But whenever I hear someone complaining about politics, no matter where you are on the fence, so it doesn't matter. Whenever you're complaining about it, that's not necessarily bad, but do something about it. We live in a democracy. So don't feel like you can't do anything about it. If you want to complain, that's fine as long as you're doing something about it. Otherwise, you're wasting your time and you're wasting whoever's listening time. So understand that that's a big myth that you can't really do anything about it. Like politics is just, you can do something. In the country we live in the best time ever, best country possible, is that success is a choice. And so that goes in line with the myth. This is an unusual correlation, but when you think about politics, it also goes into business. Because when I hear people talk about something happened to them, and guess what? Successful people always say something happened for me. They didn't know in the moment, but it happened for them. And then off they go to the races. And a good example of that, just real quick, I know we're running out of time, but if you look, I'm going to say this example just because everyone knows who this person is. So if you look at Steve Jobs, not a perfect human being by any means, not the best family guy, somewhat of a megalomaniac in some avenues. But when you look at his firm destination was to put a dent in the universe. And so at the age of 30, he was fired from Apple and he went over and started Next Computers and then became the CEO of Pixar. And then over here, Apple starts to struggle like everyone was. Everything was kind of coming down in the technology realm. So they're about to go out of business, essentially. So the only play they have is, oh, gosh, we got to ask Steve to come back. It's the only thing we can do. We got to roll the dice. So they have Steve come back. And now Jobs now is a better leader because of his time at Pixar. And they used some of the software at Next to go into the MacBooks. So then he had all these hurdles, but then he got to his firm destination. By the time of his death, Apple had the largest market cap of any company in the world. And writer, good or bad, the iPhone's probably impacted us more than anything in the last 10 years as individuals on a daily basis. It has both good and it's bad. But that's what we mean by that happened for him, not to him. And he couldn't see that till a couple years later. But really all successful people, that's the statement they would say, is that some things happened for me, not to me.
I love that. Well, that's a great place to close. Eric, thank you so much for your time. I'll be putting links to all your books and all your information and your motivational videos. Everyone listening, just watch Eric on stage. You're phenomenal how you move these enormous audiences, and just congratulations and kudos for your great work. And thank you for what you do. But I'll be putting all that in the show notes.
No, thank you for having me on, and keep doing what you do. You're impacting so many lives and I love to see it. You can see it firsthand. So keep spreading the word out there. And I love what you're doing to help people so much. It's great.
Thank you. Well, have a great rest of your day. And it's time for coffee. So we'll pick up a coffee here pretty soon.
Sounds great.
All right. Talk soon. Bye.
Cheers.
Cheers. If you're inspired by today's show and you would like to learn more about my money coaching, here's what I need you to do. Head over to Kristina.com/call. That's KristinaTina.com/call and book an appointment to speak with me. In less than 30 minutes, we will get absolutely clear on why you're not earning enough no matter how hard you work, why you can never get ahead no matter how much you earn, and what you need to know in order to finally have the time and money freedom you're working so hard for. Remember, you're not alone. 95% of Americans are one life event away from financial crisis. I will be the first person to teach you why this is the case and how to be in the other 5% that has no fear around money. No one can do this alone. You need expert help. I've helped everyone from modest earning professionals to those earning 8 figures per year get off the financial hamster wheel and finally win the money game. I look forward to helping you too. Head over to Kristina.com/call and book your call with me today. I'm Kristina Wise. Thank you for spending your valuable attention with me today. We will meet again soon.